So I'd like to first of all like to thank the sponsors for this morning. I'd like to thank Moshe and Paula Weinstein, who are sponsoring the Ilui Nishmas Yisrael ben Asher Anshel. Zerotzai will be? Asara B'Teves itself, which is related to today's shir. Also, we're going to thank Ed Klar for sponsoring the Ilui Nishmas Herzka Bas Shraga Feivel, his grandmother, Lila Nishmas Chava Bas Moshe, his aunt, and also Lina Nishmas Moshe Ben Sandel, that's his grandfather, all in the next span of the next week and a half, 2 weeks, really, essentially. It should be Le'ili Nishmasai, Nishmasayhem, Le'ili Nishmasai. And thank you for sharing in the public learning together with us. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the Yom HaShoah as it relates to us. And of course, this is connected very much to what's going to be happening after, as we have a book launch today for the memoirs of Mr. Moshe Rubin, about his memoirs of the Holocaust, Plucked from Fire, from going through Auschwitz, and those who are able to stay, able to be here, it's a moment worth treasuring and experiencing. So we're going to focus this year today. We're going to learn a little bit about the Yom HaShoah and the establishment. Now, you know, I was under a misconception, and this misconception was that the Holocaust was kept very secret, and all the discoveries happened when the Russians and the Americans came to the concentration camps, and that's when the world opened its eyes and realized how terrible everything was. And that's not true. It's not true at all. In fact, the first time I realized that this wasn't true was I was going through a Holocaust museum, and I saw a 1944 article in no less the front page New York Times about the mass murders going on in Europe. In the New York Times, this was known, but even earlier. Well, actually, interestingly enough, we find that in fall 1942, already around the time of November 1942, in the Yeshuv HaChadash, in Palestine at the time, as it was called, under the British mandate, the Jews start finding out that what is really going on in Europe. And it's interesting, because up till now, they've heard murmurings, they've heard that there's things going on, but they always think that they're exaggerations or the regular anti-Semitism which spikes, as it did in the Pale, and as it did in the East Rite. And what happened was, at the end of 1942, over 70 eyewitnesses arrived and told them in graphic detail about the machinery of murder and carnage. And they started realizing what was really going on. And so we're talking about early on. This is before even Hungarian Jewry is reached. This is really early on. This is soon after the Final Solution has been implemented itself. Of course, there are many murders that occurred beforehand. But this is just to appreciate how early this is. So what did they do? Fascinatingly enough, what they did do is they called on November 22nd, they called a meeting, the Executive Council of the Jewish Agency, the highest Jewish forum at the time, gathered a council on November 22nd, and they discussed what they should do. And they declared, first of all, a proposal for 3 days, or what they called of alarm, protest, and a call to action. So starting on November 29th, they called 3 days where the entire country stopped. So actually, has an interesting note. Here is a call kore from actually Haifa. And you can see this is the Shloshes Simet Teguvat HaYishuv. And if you read closely underneath, it says, Neged Masa Shmat Shel Chaylot HaShatan Min, I'm not sure exactly what the word is, HaNazi Al Yadut Ba'arzot Shiltonoi. So you're starting to see that they are clearly aware of what's going on. And if you notice over here that what they notice each day, there's the 21st of Kislev, which is November 29th, the 1st of December, which is the 1st of December, and the 2nd of December became Yom Tzom Tzvila Yom Bitul Melacha Rat Batasya Mischar Melacha Uvahavala. And that means to say that everything stopped. The country stopped. The newspapers declared that there was... Oh, what was that? Apologies? Yes, 1942. And this means to say, the newspapers reported at this time that there were over 100,000 people who participated in this, to appreciate the magnitude of this across the issue. We're used to thinking, you know, it was much later that everybody realized they were clearly keyed in, and this is what they were able to do at the time as it happened. This is, in fact, a picture of, this is the third day of Yom Tzon Utzvila, where like in the times when you read the Gemara in Tanis, where people gather together and have a fast day, a public fast day, and a Torah reading in public. This is it. This is what was happening in 1942, December 2nd, Chof Gimel Kislev, just before Chanukah started. This is what was happening in the Yeshiva at the time, as they started realizing the painful realization of the helplessness they had to what was happening across just further northwest. What they also did is that they, the Jewish agency declared a month of mourning from the beginning of, from December 18th to June 16th that year, going to 1943. And they made it that every Thursday would be a fast day. It wasn't so widely upheld, but nonetheless, this was just an appreciation of the magnitude of the loss as it was going on, literally, in the Yishuv. And by the way, the Yishuv had their own concerns, because as Rommel is approaching from the south in the desert campaign, meaning they were under direct threat themselves. So this is a very tenuous time, a very terrible time. On the religious side of things, the Rabbanut took control of the religious aspects of this, which was like the third day, which was the Yom Tzon. And Rav Yitzchak HaLevi Herzog, who was the chief Ashkenazi rabbi from 1937 in the Yeshiva Chadash, in fact, himself organized and orchestrated across the world. So he reached out to many other countries, you know, Australia, South Africa, England, across the countries that they should also coordinate. There were tens of countries of Jews around the world who were also participating in this Yom Tzon, the Avel Kaved, what he called it. Avel Kaved Klali. And it was on that day that in the old Churva Shul, this is a picture of the old Churva Shul before it was destroyed the second time by the Jordanians. This was on Chof Gimel Kislev that thousands of Jews came to the Churva, including hundreds of Rabbanim, and the services were led by none other than the Gera Rebbe, who led the services in the Churva on that day of Yom Tzon and Avel Kaved Klali, which was declared. Now, unfortunately, this is what we do. This is our call Yaakov. Right? This is our reaction to things. But notice that this over here isn't so much of a commemoration, right? I mean, to say, if you were to ask, what was Rav Herzog trying to achieve here? He wasn't trying to maintain memory. He wasn't trying to commemorate. What was he doing? This is a tefillah. This is a tefillah of Hashem, stop them, right? There was the Avel part as well, but the Tanis was very much about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Yirachem, right? This is what was going on over here. What is interesting is that, you see, this is a little bit different to after the war. After the war, it's not so much about stopping, but it's about commemorating, memorializing. How do we remember that? And that's where it becomes a little more complicated. Here, everybody was on the same page. It was after the war that it became a little more complicated. There's a conversation which was had between Rav Herzog and none other than the Brisker Rav, who had recently moved to Yerushalayim. He lived in Yerushalayim, one of the towering figures of the Haredi Jewry in Israel. And he came, and it's actually interesting, it's recorded in a conversation by Rav Moshe Sternbach, who records this in his Shalas and Shuvos, in the second Chelek, where he describes the meeting between Rav Herzog and the Brisker Rav as to what to do for future. Now, how do we sort of crystallize this? How do we turn this into something which is going to be forever? So here's what he says. He says the following. He says, B'shnas Tafshin Gimel. So that's actually 1942 to 1943. So this meeting actually occurred during the war. That's what's interesting, as he recounts it. In the year Tafshin Gimel, כשהגיעו לארץ שמוע שריבי רבבות אחינו נשחטים ונטבחים, הרב הרצוג זיכרונו לברכה, בו אל מרן זכר צדיק לברכה, וביקש לתקן על זה יום אבל. So he wanted, Rav Herzog wasn't sufficiently happy with just that day. He wanted to create in perpetuity, a Yom Avel for the Shmuel's rise. He says, "V'shal osa hanir le'el efo." So aval maronzal hisnaged v'amar she'asul osif al yemei ha'avel. So the Brisker Rav says, "You cannot add on communal days of mourning." Now he wasn't talking about the Tanis, right? He was talking about the continual annual day of mourning. Why not? V'shal osa hanir le'el efo ze kasuv. Where exactly is that written? V'amar agriz zeichet tzadik livracha hakina she'anu retishavav. So he says it's in the kinos themselves. Take a look. Let's actually see if we've got the kinah here. Here we are. This is the kinah about the Crusades. Now it's fascinating. This is two pages later. Why is this interesting? It's because the Crusades is one of those events which isn't directly Churban related. It isn't directly about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, right? But there was a separate kinah written about it, right? So as the three waves of Crusades ran through Europe, pillaging and destroying Jewish communities in their wake. A lot of the people who were sent on crusades were people who were exonerated from prison by the king. And so we're talking about barbarians on the most part, who went through Europe, and anybody they found, any Jews they found, they destroyed the communities of Worms, Spire. And this kinah was written about that. And so in this kinnah, this is the language of the kinnah. Now, of course, Rav Moshe Sternbach notes that the Brisker Rav quoted this kinnah word by word, off by heart, meaning to say, you know, like, this is all part of his internal liturgy. It was all there. He says, this is how the poem says itself. Simono alavavchem mispeid marin lakoshra. Note on your heart this terrible eulogy. Kishakula harigosam nisabel it is para. Because it is so heavy, it is awaited, their killing, and we need to give it true avelos. It's like the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, what happened in the Crusades. This is what the Kinai says. Notice, by the way, it's all rhyming. This is how these things were set up. So he said that the Paitan said, we should not add a Mo'ed and Shever and burning to it. We should make it earlier or later. What is the Paitan really saying here?
Don't add more days.
Now, it's interesting. When did the crusade, when did the destruction of Worms and Spire actually happen? What month of the year?
It was the Mesfira.
It was the times of Iyar and Sivan. So the Brisker Rav points out, they should have made their day of suffering and their day of commemoration during Iyar and Sivan. And it would have been appropriate because that's the times of Sfira. That would have been the time to establish and to commemorate. And nonetheless, the Kinnah itself explains itself why it doesn't. And the reason is because so you can't add them. So therefore, it became amalgamated into Tisha B'Av. So that's what the Brisker Rav suggested. Very fascinating argument and interesting. We go back to his tshuva, and he, actually, in the end of the day, he says, he only brought this as his reasoning. He said, that's it, we have precedent. The precedent is we don't create new days. If we don't create new days, therefore the only way to commemorate what we're talking about in the Holocaust, like the Crusades, would be with subsumed into Tisha B'Av. That's the way that the...
Who's the Paitan?
I don't remember this specific one. It could have been... I know that Rambam Rotenberg was earlier. He was the one about Shalish, the one later. Shalish Saruf Ba'esh. I'm not sure the Paitan was in this particular one. But we're not talking about a regular Joe on the streets. We're talking about, you know, the greatest of the generation. What was that?
Around the time of the
Ma'aril, yes. I'm not exactly familiar. We can look in the kinot and see the exacts of who it was. Having said that, it is interesting that, you know, there's lots of questions we could ask. There's lots of questions you could ask on the Brisker Rav over here. Any questions that come to mind just offhand? Yes, one question we could ask is do we give halachic significance to a kinnah? Meaning, is that the ground sufficient to understand this? Maybe is this descriptive? Is this prescriptive? That's part of a question that we might ask. Shalom.
Just because they made the decision not to doesn't mean that they shouldn't. It was not the Crusades were terrible. They were not of the same magnitude.
So maybe the Holocaust is different. Now, it's interesting. We're going to come across just theologically why it is that maybe the Holocaust should be separate, and it's going to be interesting as we go through some of the later authors and personalities to appreciate that maybe that's a reason exactly not to make it different. We'll see in a second.
And there is another point, yeah, which is that we did not let the Crusades completely pass. One could make an argument that some of the commemorations of Sfira became more intense. For example, not saying Avrachmim, not omitting Avrachmim during Sfira.
You're saying there were other expressions of the Crusades which came into being.
Right, I believe that's where the origin of that minute was.
Right, from the Crusades themselves.
So we didn't just say, oh, it's going to be...
It wasn't above. Completely subsumed.
We didn't do it.
Very interesting. Barbara, one last thought?
Yeah.
No, Herod was during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Herod killed the Chachamim during the Beis Hamikdash, reformatted the Beis Hamikdash, and then he brought in the Romans. So, that was all part of Beis Hamikdash-esque. 100%, but that was all as a function of the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, so this is interesting. Just an interesting picture of Aaron Kotler, Rav Herzog, the Brisker Rav at a particular gallery, the Heichal Shlomo as well. And just to appreciate, you know, Rav Herzog, this is an important point to notice. The Brisker Rav wasn't rejecting the words of Rav Herzog because of who was saying we should establish this. Just appreciate this. His argument was purely historical halachic. It wasn't because he in any way looked down, Rachman and Litzon, on Rav Herzog. Just to appreciate this. Later on, there were rejections of the movement because look who's doing it. It wasn't, that was not part of the conversation here. I just found an interesting conversation about Rav Aaron Kotler at the funeral 1957 of Rav Herzog. And just to just appreciate, Rav Herzog had the greatest respect in all worlds. He's our Rav Herzog. Over here, he quotes in Yiddish. He says, Where is Rav Kotler? He says, Is Galgola Liyadi Pepikiyoshasi Ima Rav Herzog b'Chicago Umasa Maton Ima B'Divrei Torah. So I had a conversation with Rav Herzog in Chicago. Ish Yusoy HaMazhira Hishpia Harbei Al Kol Pogshov Ba'ir. He had such an incredible influence on those people in the city. Lamar Lamrot Shahaya B'Mokom Rak Zman Katzar. Even though he was there for a short amount of time. Kulam Ro B'Foyal Adinut Nafshoy V'Nidvat Libo. Everybody saw the purity of his soul and the giving heart. He had Kedusha emanating from him. Everybody was moved when Rav Herzog moved into town. He was a very powerful man, and it describes how Rav Herzog, it constantly used to describe how Rav Herzog not only gave Shirim to the greatest of the Rabbanim, he gave it to all the Amcha and every single person. He felt for every single Jew, every single person, somebody you cared for. Tremendously respected individual. So that was not part of the discussion at all. But it is interesting, what did Rav Herzog do after that meeting? Meaning, say, what was his view? Sach hakol. So, fascinatingly enough, he actually answers, he has a tshuva in his works, which is in the Heichal Yitzchak, which is his responsa. And at the end of it, he describes how he feels that there should be a Yom Avel, there should be a day of commemoration and mourning. And at the end, he has a Holy Safa, which is his end note, in which he says, I have heard people who say, because of the kina on Tisha B'Av, that we shouldn't make new Yom Tovs, or new Yom Avel. And he says, I disagree with that, because it seems to be, the way he rereads that kina, is it's not saying that we shouldn't add new Yom Tovs, but we shouldn't have Yom Avel around the Chag of Shavuos. Not before, not afterwards, and that's how he rereads it. It's a little bit of a difficult reading, but nonetheless, he does deal with that particular point. But ultimately, in practice, he never really did anything about this. Why? And the last paragraph of his, it's a very short response, but it says the following. V'ulam, hi iruni echad negdi v'zehu. Somebody actually responded against me and said, I shouldn't set up this Yom Avel, this Yom Avel. Why? Adai no nigmara hamilchama. U'miyoda efshar shema she'avar aleinu hu chevlei Mashiach. V'al kein yesh lanu lidchoes es ha'achlata ad la'acharei hamilchama. He says, you know what? We're still in the war. It's so bad, it's so terrible. Maybe these are the birth pangs of Mashiach. So how are we going to establish Yom Avel while we might be in something which is greater? This obviously was while the war was still going on. The actual date of the response is Tav Zayin Teves, Tav Shin Hei. So we're talking really early 1945, which is when this Shova is returned to Rav Mishakovsky, who's the person who spoke to, and he actually defers and says, I'm not going to do it during the war. And interestingly enough, he passed away in 1957. Till then, he never really established that Yom Avel for whatever reason. But nonetheless, his ideology was we need to do it, and he has many reasons why we should do it. But he stopped off without actually doing it. It is interesting. Once again, as well, just for the sake of time, I want to make sure we don't miss anything. It is interesting that the Rabbanut had a different opinion. He was, of course, part of the Rabbanut, but the Rabbanut itself established the day of Yom HaShoah as being this week, Asar B'Teves. That's why it's relevant to this week. This is a letter of Rav Unterman, Rav Isser Yehuda, or Rav Isser Yaakov Unterman, who was one of the chief rabbinates. This particular paragraph is found in a very elusive book. It's called Sefer HaMoadim. You cannot find this in print anywhere, not even on eBay anymore these days, in which it's very hard to get hold of the Sefer. I managed to get it from a library of somebody who's an elderly person who passed away, and they had a tremendous library. I was able to see this very unusual Sefer. So Rav Unterman has a description about what was done on this Asar HaBeteves. What did the Rabbanut envision Asar HaBeteves to be as a Holocaust memorial? He says, he talks about how Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple, surrounded the temple on the Asar HaBeteves, and that became the beginning of the end, and that's why we should commemorate it now. So what he actually says is, this obvious paragraph, HaRabbanut HaRashit BeYisrael Tikna LaHadlik BeOysa Yom Nerus Neshama LaZeicha HaKadoshim. They said you should light candles Lomar Kaddish Rispele Ilu Nishmasam, and to daven for the Ilu of the Nishamas. Atzarot Atzarot Om, Vas Koros Likdosh Kios Akodesh, Neerchois Beves Knesses Rabim. There are public commemorations in Shul for this. Akahal Omer Kaddish Rakama Mizmore Tehillim, Posuk Akar Posuk. People should do psukim one after the other. Elokim lon mimichsev oiz. He gives examples. Mizmar laasaf. Elokim bo'u gobe nach rosecho. Elokim al tada al daminoch. Shirem alaz mimamakim. Haramonot dorshim minyan ayom. Hachazanim orchim az karot neshamot l'shishan l'milyonim shinesu. He says the chazanim should be called in to make the kel money for those who are killed. Mashmiim kel money rachmim, but nusach miyuchad la'achar tulas aleinu, sara kahal kuloi, himnon hafreida shel hakdoshim ani mamin. And at the end of the service, we should sing ani mamin. So the Rabbanot had a very specific formula as to what Asar Rabbi Tavis should have looked like. And Rabbi Noagim not says, lebotek foros shvamokum lishtatech al efer hakdoshim. He said, if you had access to the ashes of those who were killed, you should go out to the cemetery and go and pray for them. And he talks about how so many people come to Yerushalayim to Har Zion, and he goes on to describe the practices of the day. The Rabbanot felt that what we're going to do is we're going to subsume it in another day. We're not going to create a new holiday, but we're going to put it in our Sarabite, which became the beginning of the end of the destruction of the temple. And he felt he and they felt this was what followed suit. It is interesting that I don't know specifically, but that whole month of mourning, remember that the first in 1942 to 1943, that December 18th to 16th of January, that period was essentially Teves. I mean to say the time they really realized this was really right before Teves, which makes sense. So they're not shifting it over in any time in the year. They're doing at the time that they discovered it, and this is how it would be celebrated. Unfortunately, as we know, that's not what caught on or whatsoever. Today, there's very few people who talk about this, who actually commemorate this. Why? Well, there's numbers of reasons. One is that the Knesset had a different idea. the Knesset had a different way of looking at things than the Rabbanot. And this is a paper. Let me just make sure I got the name of the lady who wrote this paper, just to make sure we're on the same page. This is a paper written by Dalia. I apologize. I just want to make sure we have a. This is a paper written by, I apologize for the delay, by a lady called Dalia Ofer, called The Strength of Remembrance, Commemorating the Holocaust During the First Decade of Israel. It's in the Jewish Social Studies New Series in Volume 6. Okay, so this is her description. And she talks about how there was a whole committee which was charged with the responsibility of proposing ways to commemorating the Holocaust. And this is in 1945. So imagine the magnitude of this responsibility. How do you get people to remember things? You know, like a year or two afterwards, okay, we get it. What happens a decade later? What happens 3 decades later? What about 7 decades later? How do you get people to remember things? Very complicated, right? So they had their own internal investigation. The Strength of Remembrance, who considered this goal to the utmost importance, the Jewish people have shown special talent for weaving historical events into solemn memorials for generations to come. Thus, the memory of the Exodus from Egypt became an important channel for which the Jewish people's yearning for freedom could flow. Similarly, the memory of the destruction of the Temple was a source for which all generations longed redemption, and the memory of the heroism of the years of the Jews, of the wars of the Jews, gave us strength and hope. Special Remembrance Days integrated all these memories into the Jewish lifestyle. Every year, Jewish thought contemplated past events, and the Jewish soul was filled with longing and yearning, longings and yearnings. There are two ways to commemorate the past, either by a book, or by massive structures, perpetual memorials. In this period, we must embark upon both paths. So they said we need a book, and we need a commemoration. Now, unfortunately, what's missing from this perspective is Torah. Unfortunately, meaning the reason why it is that we remember the Exodus is because there's a Seder. The reason why we remember Matan Torah is because there's Shavuos. The reason why we remember the Tabernacles is because we make a Sukkah. You can't just suddenly, make a random commemoration and hope that people get, it's going to be so random, it's going to be really arbitrary. But nonetheless, in the 40s and 50s, many intellectuals, politicians, and survivors feared that the events of the Holocaust and their significance would be co-signed to oblivion. They thought that the existence of Israel, the fact that young people growing up in Israel were so far removed from the Jewish life of the diaspora, would certainly lead to forgetfulness. This was expressed in speeches given by Knesset members during the session of April 12, 1951, that proclaimed the 27th day of Nisan as a Holocaust and the Ghetto Uprising Remembrance Day. It was called Yom HaShoah HaGvura. That was what it was called. 2 years later, the subject came up again in discussions on the first reading of the bill for the Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Law of the Yad Vashem Authority, and that's what ultimately has become the secular commemoration day for the Holocaust of the 27th of Nisan. Actually, the Warsaw Uprising took place earlier in the month of Nisan, but nonetheless, they put it later, and there are many objections because Nisan is a month of happiness.
They didn't want to put it in. What actually happened, it was like Pesach.
It was Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, so Erev Pesach is not such a fortuitous day to make a day of remembrance. So this is on the one side. The Rabbanut was really, in a certain sense, not remembered, unfortunately, in that respect for many. And today we still have the Yom HaShoah as it is on the 27th of Nisan. What happened in halachic history? Fascinating. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was asked this tshuva, asked in his responsa about this, and he says something really interesting. He actually brings up a question which we haven't considered yet. And that is, if we go back to in Jewish history, there really was a day which was created after the destruction of the temple, which was a separate day of mourning for a terrible calamity, and it was its own unique day. What was that day? up to now we've been sweeping something under the carpet. Not Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av has always been there. There's another day which was made in the last 500 years. Chav Sivan. The 20th of Sivan. 20th Sivan has two interesting historical notes. Number one, there are those who claim that Rabbeinu Tam himself, even 800 years ago, established the 20th of Sivan as a day for the Crusades. That is one argument. Nonetheless, it got full traction after the Gezeiros Tach V'Tat, the Bodon Chilmaniki massacres in the 1600s. In the 1600s, what happened was there was a revolution of the peasants led by a fellow called Bodon Chilmaniki, in the Ukraine, and this fellow again and Poland, and he basically blamed all the aristocracy and the bourgeois of being the controllers of the keys of wealth, and who of course got killed, the Jews, and the Polish government tried to protect the Jews, but the Polish government was an ineffective government, and the numbers range. Some numbers go up to the hundreds of thousands of Jews who were slaughtered. Now remember, this was all mechanized killings. This is axes and knives. We're talking about a massacre of mass proportions, which occurred in these times in the world. Or the Polish government sat on and onlooked while the scapegoat was slaughtered in their face. And because of that, because of the Gezeiros Tach V'Tat, those are the Hebrew years that it occurred, they established the 20th of Sivan as a fast day. And anybody who asks somebody from Europe who lived in Europe will remember that. Today we don't celebrate, we don't commemorate this too much.
That was a little bit after.
Yes, so it's interesting that Rabbeinu Tam was talking about the Crusades. Apparently that didn't gain full traction. When they used the 20th of Sivan for the Gezeiros Tach V'Tat, it sort of incorporated the Rabbeinu Tam's original idea as both.
Okay, so,
yes, it was a fast day. Now, today we don't do it. I mean, today we talk about this when the Chof Nisan comes on, but this was almost a local fast day to those areas in Europe that suffered, which was a large swath of land. So, okay, good. So maybe it's different from all of Israel. That's the question at hand. Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses this whole question, and he talks about b'dvar ha'gzeros shebavotosein ha'rabim ne'ergu erech asara pamim shishim riboy al yidei Rishayim Hitler v'chaveri yamach shemam. Just by the way, I just appreciate this. Rav Moshe says shebavotosein ha'rabim. Okay, just to appreciate this. He's not blaming people, but he's saying that when he talks about our many sins, he is saying that we have something. There's something, and he's not pointing fingers, but he's just pointing, this is something important, that when we talk about calamity, we don't always say it's completely not us. Tzadik v'ra'lo. There's a lot we do own as well, and that's what he mentions over here. He says, "She'na'roish ha'reo tzorich eze yom kavu l'tanis v'litfila, she'tamo malas kvoida al sh'adai lo na'ase klum." So the questioner of the Rav Moshe says, why has nothing been done? Why has nothing officially been done yet? He says, "Bekinois." So then he goes on to the Briskarov's suggestion that the kenos themselves prescribe that there's no more kenos, so no more of the days of avelos. Then he says the following:
V'loy dami. How do we count for the
chav sivan? That's what he's about to talk about. The next paragraph: V'loy dami l'gzeros d'shnas hey alafim tach v'tat al yedei chelmaniki rosh hakozakim. Right. So. Well, the Cossack massacres are not similar to this, right? By the way, that's found in the Noisa Kenel Shulchan Aruch. It wasn't just a tradition. The Taz talks about this fast day on Shulchan Aruch. Mishum sheloi ha'isa zu gzera klolis gzera sagalus v'churban. Elo ha'yu rak shebechelek medina achas sh'ha'isa gzera noisefes al oisan ha'makamos. He says that the Cossacks were, in a certain sense, an anomaly. They were an exception because it wasn't a government-orchestrated murder. It was, in fact, it was barbarians who were, the government were trying to stop. So they were almost like an exception to the way we've been killed throughout all of history. All the things we celebrate during history on Tisha B'Av are as a function, says Rav Moshe, of the Churban HaBayis. We're now in Golus, and that means to say we're at the will and whim of any nation who decides to kill us, to set up an inquisition, an otodufe, to torture us, to have government-sponsored pogroms. Those are all subsumed in the day of Yemei Evel or Yom Evel of Tisha B'Av. He says the Cossacks were an exception. The Cossacks were non-governmental, a sporadic chain of events which was limited to one locale. And therefore he says, Aval gzeras de Hitler, do you al klal Yisrael. Hitler talked about all of Israel. He conquered countries and killed systematically every Jew in every place. He wanted to kill the whole world. Only Hashem had rachamim to stop that terrible demon. And that's why we don't establish a new one. Just a different nuance on the way that he understands it. He views that everything is expanding out of the destruction of the temple. Everything is a function of our golos, and therefore we can have people or monsters like him. It is, you know, there's a famous story there of Yisrael Meir Lau tells of his meeting with Ed Kach. So he met him in his office, and Ed Kach says, you know, I'm also a survivor. And Yisrael Meir Lau was a real survivor. So he says, I don't really appreciate that. How are you a survivor? He says, well, I visited Germany. We got to go into Hitler Yimach Shemoy's office. And on his office, there was a globe. And on that globe, every country had a number on it. Every country had a number, and that number was the number of Jews in that country. Because in his mind, he was going to conquer every single country in the world and kill every single Jew in every country. He says, we're just lucky here in America that he never got here. When Rav Moshe talks about this, is that that monster? This was world Jewry. He wanted to get into Palestine and kill the Yishuv. This is why Rav Moshe says this is a function of the continual Golus, which is why it is subsumed into Tisha B'Av. On a different slant, this is just a different perspective on things. This is in a footnote. Rav Jacob J. Schechter pointed this out. There's a footnote that Rav Yehiel Michal Weinberg, the Seridei Eish, has in his introduction, in one of his responses, a shana about Hilchos Shabbos. And in the footnote, he has a little asterisk, and he talks about the German rabbi who asked him. Now, I apologize, I put in a different set of notes. I really should mention the name. I'm going to try to send it out afterwards, because that's the whole point. He says the following. This is just a different perspective on things, and it's important to remember. He says the following. Hashoyel hayo talmid vasik shel beis medrash l'rabbonim, moistoy shel maran agon, maran Azriel Hilzheimer, zichron evrocha. So this was a German Rav, an educated rabbi from the Hildesheimer Yeshiva in Germany. Who nispe b'shoah ha'amrat? He was taken into the Shoah Yedei Amaratzkim ha'Germanim Yimach Shemam. Remember, he escaped to Switzerland. That's how he managed to get out. Hu ha'yot tzadik tamim osek b'torah yom v'layla v'noeg b'kedusha v'tara b'chol ha'chayus b'chol something, I'm not sure that word is, chayav. This man was a holy man every single living day of his life. He had the ability. This person asked me the question, could have escaped from the Holocaust. He saw the writing on the wall. He experienced Kristallnacht. He knew what was coming. He decided he wasn't going to abandon those people who could not escape in his community, and he stayed with them. He says, we need to get the generations to know that there were great tzaddikim who lived in Germany. Right? That people would run to get the wellsprings of their Torah. Germany, and he talks about how that these PhDs in physics and chemistry and philosophy and English literature, which they didn't express publicly unless they were dealing with the reform movement, and how these people managed to straddle both worlds of the Torah. And he says, "L'dati ro lipo yom evo v'zichron miyuchad v'zecher rabonei kudoshei Yisrael shenergu v'shenit b'chu v'shenisrfu al kiddush Hashem." We need a day of remembrance. Laz kibra yom zeis nishmosem shel kudoshim elu. We need to remember these holy individuals who walked this earth. It's not just because of their honor. We need to remember for us, because we need to know what happened then. We need to know what we're missing in the world, that individuals like that, a person who sacrificed his own life so he should die with his community, stayed in Europe to preserve himself, and a person who had the greatest level of Torah learning and academic excellence. And this is notice something what Rabbi Chaim Weinberg is saying here. He's not saying let's open up a day of fasting. He's not saying let's open up a day of Avel. What's he saying? A day of commemoration. It's interesting. He says there has to be something. It may be true we can't halachically create a new day of fasting, but something needs to be there, because where will they go? Who will remember this man? That's what Rabbi Chaim Weinberg is. What did Rav Soloveitchik think on this? Rav Soloveitchik's writings are replete with this. Rav Soloveitchik has a very specific opinion. He agrees. This is in the first section is in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Sheft, and this is in Mipnine Rav again, Rav Sheft quoting him. He says, Mishnos HaShoah Va'elach Elu Kama Pa'amim Es HaTza'o Likboa Yom Evel Miyuchad L'Churban Yurp. A Rodpa, we should set up a special day. V'tomid Ho'esat Shuvas Rabbeinu Al Pima She'anachnu Omri B'kina Tishabav She'nis Chavro Al Kedosha Ashpira V'Ramazio V'Megensa So he goes back to the Briskerov's argument, the house of Brisk, his uncle, and he says that ultimately we cannot establish new fast days. And he says he has an extra interesting footnote. And this footnote is actually found in this pasuk, which is one of the earlier kenas we have. This is in Tanakh itself. This is in Dira Yomim Beis. V'ikonen Yemiyo al Yoshio v'yomru kol asorim v'asorois b'kinoi sehem Al Yoshio ad hayom vayernum alachoik al Yisrael. Yoshio was one of the greatest kings who did Shuvah in Israel. He was killed because he overestimated his confidence in the people, and Yirmiyahu himself made a kinnah for him. This is before the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. And Yirmiyahu made the first kinnah, and this we actually read this kinnah in on Tisha B'Av itself. Interesting words of vayernum alachoik al Yisrael. He made this as a day of as a rule for Israel. What does that mean? Vayernum alachoik kishim izdamin lohem shum zrashi. So Rashi says, what it is he's establishing the day. There's going to be one day where we're going to amalgamate every suffering of the Jewish people, and that's the choik, that's the rule. It's all going to come together. Yoshio's death, it wasn't on Tisha B'Av. Yoshio's death is going to fall in the same place as, says Rashi, B'yomenu. What's Rashi talking about? The Crusades, 1100s. He says, in our days as well, it is all absorbed into Tisha B'Av itself. This is what Soloveitchik feels as an example. Why is this important? Because in 1977, there's an interesting conversation happens between Soloveitchik and Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin, in the summer 1977, actually came to visit many of the Gedolei Olam in America. The meetings, the stories about the meetings are fascinating. He was sworn in at the beginning of June 1977. And he spoke to Rav Soloveitchik about this. So Rav Menachem Begin, on August the 2nd, 1977, less than 2 months in office as Prime Minister in Israel, the change of the country, right, from Labour to Likud, we're now in the new, we're in the, on the right wing, the underrepresented faction of Israel is now in power, the shift of what the country is looking like. And within 2 months of power, he gets up, then he made an impassioned speech to Knesset saying, we need to make the Yom HaShoah when? On Tisha B'Av. Based on this conversation, based on his discussion with Rav Soloveitchik. Ultimately, it did not gain traction, and today we still have Yom HaShoah V'Agvura, and that is on the 27th of Nisan. But nonetheless, he tried. There were a lot of people who felt that by doing that, you would actually be eclipsing the Holocaust. It's too much to put at the tail end of Tisha B'Av. Rav Shachter points out, and I think this is an important point to think about. Rav Shachter points out, this is something that maybe we don't think about, is that when you create a new day, when you create a new day of commemoration or Yom Avelus, philosophically and theologically, what you're saying is that the Holocaust is different, right? Meaning to say, you're saying if the Holocaust can't belong in Tisha B'Av, then it can't theologically belong in Tisha B'Av either. That means to say that the general way we look at theological catastrophes cannot be applied to the Holocaust. And that's one of the background reverberations. What Rav Soloveitchik, what the Grubiskerov was saying is it was horrific, and perhaps the most horrific event in Jewish history. But understand that we can still think about it. We can still think about it in a Tisha B'Av-esque manner. We don't say that it is inexplicable in any way whatsoever. That's just a philosophical, theologically, this debate is not just about commemoration and Yemei Avelos. It's also about how do we deal with it. If we can't deal with it anyway, then there's no way to conceptualize it. That's what one of the arguments as well. Rav Schachter himself, this is all based on an article he wrote. I actually had a very interesting session a few years ago in Yarek HaKala with him. And he talked about this. He talked about the position of the Chazon Ish, which is very nuanced. We don't have time to go into it right now, because he also lived at the same time, was asked the same questions. But Rav Jacob Schachter has an article in Tradition a few years ago, about almost 10 years ago, in which he says he's concerned on either side. Meaning he's concerned on the one side is that when you have a day devoid of religious significance, like Yom HaShoah, yes, there are going to be well over 1,000 people who come to Beth Shalom. But folks, that's a drop in the bucket in the Five Towns Jewish community. Let's be honest. And most of them are Orthodox. Right? So when you talk about that's a beautiful communal program. But how many people really are part of it? How many people once the wheels shift and there's only children and there's only grandchildren and there's only great-grandchildren? How many people are going to be coming out when you have a day which is only commemorated as lighting candles and poems and videos? How long is it going to last? It's a concern. We're not so good with creating days of memory without religious significance. On the other day, on the other side, when we turned to Tisha B'Av, it was only very recently that we actually had our own kinnah for Tisha B'Av. Rav Soloveitchik wouldn't have his own kinnah, interestingly enough. He felt that there was nobody qualified in the generation to write that kinnah. Later on, I believe it's in the 70s or 80s, Rav Schwab penned one, and there was another few, I believe, one of the Rebbe's penned one as well, which we have in our... the Baba of Rebbe... And just interestingly enough, Rav Schachter talks about the meeting they had, and the council of Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah got together, and they said, "Nu, why aren't we doing this?" And the Baba Rebbe, you know what the Rebbe said? He says, "Till now, I've been saving the people who survived. We didn't even have time to think about the people who died." I mean, the Baba Rebbe was literally saving people off the street who had still the living skeletons of the Holocaust. He said, "We didn't have time to even look back. We could only look forward." And that's why later on, a few decades later, the kinnos were penned. How much is it eclipsed in Tisha B'Av, or how much is it a focus of Tisha B'Av, is also a concern. I believe, I think that there's a beauty in it being in Tisha B'Av, that Tisha B'Av being the day which we understand that it is all a trajectory of that Golos. And this is, unfortunately, the greatest expression of what Golos means. Shiyavoy Mashiach Tzikeinu B'Mehera V'Yameinu Mamash.